Welcome to this week's episode of the Sports Community Podcast, a podcast to get volunteers of sports clubs excited, empowered, and motivated. Now, here are your hosts, Steve Pellis and Joe Novella.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Community Podcast with your hosts, Joe Novella and Steve Pellis, for all the best content revolving around grassroots sports here in Australia. You're with us now, and we hope you enjoy what's coming up, because we've been off the air for a little while, haven't we, Steve?
Joe, it's 2nd of May was our last podcast, so we apologise, but we took a bit of a hiatus because we have been working on some really big things that we've now got out into the sports community. So we're really excited to get back on air and to be talking to the people that are passionate and have got great stories to tell.
Absolutely. And speaking of content, because that's what we really are about here at Sports Community, providing the best content that we can, whether it be, you know, podcast or articles on our websites or training courses or whatever it might be, for people who are volunteers at grassroots sports clubs. We've had some major content developments that have really come to fruition in the last few months, and maybe if I can just step in with the first one, it's a product called ClubSpot. You know, we've built it, and so we've got a little bit of a vested interest. But if we could take a little bit of time to blow our own trumpet, this is an amazing product which we truly, honestly, hand on heart, believe will help volunteers at grassroots sports clubs. So Steve, maybe take a little bit of an opportunity to tell us what ClubSpot is and how it's used out there in club land, because we do have quite a few people using it currently.
Well, yeah, Joe, and I guess before we talk ClubSpot, and I guess this is just going to show the lack of preparation we've put into this show, but before we talk about ClubSpot, Joe, I thought I'd just go back a step and talk about the first major initiative for 2016 was we were often asked, what do we do? And we kind of all had different answers, and it wasn't until we sat down earlier in the year and wrote a completely separate website called sportscommunitypro.com.au, which lists all the different things and services that we do and provide to councils, whether it's councils, peak sporting bodies, clubs, or volunteers themselves. And Joe, I think we surprised ourselves when we sat down to write the website and actually for the first time in 4 years put down all the ways that we support the clubs through, you know, whether it through councils or peak body training sessions, live webinars, our books, and those sorts of resources. But moving on to the ClubSpot, so check out sportscommunitypro.com.au, and that's really a description of our services. ClubSpot is, I agree with you, it's pretty cool. It's a combination of three or four different things pulled together. But first and foremost, Joe, and you've done a great job of actually pulling it together. It's not in my makeup to give you a big rap too often, but you've done a great job of creating the sports community service. And what it is, it's kind of got three parts. It's first and foremost, it's a library of training videos, templates, checklists, resources, tools that empower, support volunteers to do a particular job, whether it's on the committee, social media, fundraising, communication, risk management. We've got, 25 or 30 hours worth of training videos within ClubSpot, 25 different position descriptions, and probably the same sort of checklists and templates. And we're going to continue to update ClubSpot on a quarterly basis and continually put new training videos and new training tools and new checklists and new templates in there. But a really important part of ClubSpot, Joe, and we're really, it's taken a huge amount of work. We've we've mapped out all the different tasks that are typically done by a club at the different months of their year. So in month one, go through a list of tasks, month two, month three, month four, etc. And so what the purpose of those, we then converted all those task lists into emails, and we've got 12 emails which we send to members of ClubSpot, and which those emails will have a list of tasks to do or consider for that month, and then links to the best available resource in the country, whether it's sports community, play by the rules, government websites, sports commission websites, the best information that relates to that particular task. So the key is that, or the power of the this part of the ClubSpot, Joe, is that that people may not even know what tasks are coming up for that next month. They get the email, they see the tasks, and then link to the best resources. So we're pretty proud of that, and it's taken a huge amount of time and effort to, particularly by yourself, Joe, to work out how to hold that together. So at the moment, we're only offering ClubSpot to councils and peak sporting bodies. So if you're a football club in Victoria, netball club in Victoria, cycling club in New South Wales, basketball club in Queensland, QRL, rugby league club in Central Division of Queensland, and or clubs in about 10 or 12 different councils, then you'll be already being given notification or access to join ClubSpot. If not, and if have a look at sportscommunitypro.com.au and click on the ClubSpot tab, and then it'll show you exactly what ClubSpot is. You'll see a video there, or in the next couple of days, there'll be a video that'll demonstrate it. And if you think it's something that for your club, then contact your local council or peak sporting body and send them the link and say, hey, come and talk to Sports Community. So it's really cool, and we're really proud, and we've had a huge uptake. I think we've got just under 20 councils and peak sporting bodies making ClubSpot available to their clubs for free. So, Joe, that's been a big, and that's really our only...
About 2,000 members now?
Yeah, 2,000 volunteers are being accessing this great support tool, and we expect it to go to 10 to 20,000, you know, really quickly. So, it has taken us a lot of time, and hence that's our justification and our reason for not being on the air since the 2nd of May. So, to which we really, really apologise, because we were inundated with people kind of contacting us and saying, where's this week's podcast? Mainly your mum, to be fair, though, Joe. But really, really glad to be back on air. Joe, the other thing that we're really starting to research in our next project for the second half of the year is we're really turning our attention to fundraising for sports clubs. So what we've been doing, we're in the research phase at the moment, and we're trying something different. And it's working beautifully well. What we're doing, instead of us doing the research, what we're doing is each fortnight we're picking a type of fundraising activity. It could be sponsorship. It could be a sporting event as a fundraising activity, or it could be raffles or a whole range of different fundraising types. And via our email newsletters and via our Facebook, we're asking our community, which is massive, our sports community out there, to share their ideas and to share their experiences. And there's a few of us in here when we first decided to try and get the ideas from our community that kind of didn't think it would work. But it's been amazing, Joe, hasn't it? The amount of ideas and feedback and people spending a lot of time emailing us with their ideas, their thoughts, or linking to the us in Facebook and sharing their posts. So what we're looking to do over the next 12 weeks is have a real heavy focus on in the interviews coming up on fundraising. and sharing and exploring the different fundraising ideas that people are telling us about. So today's session, today's interview, Joe, which I'm really excited about, is along that theme with a very, very experienced fundraiser, very experienced person in Nikki Weston from Upper Hunter in regional New South Wales. And Nikki's also not just passionate about community sport, but she's also a two-time world champion in duathlons. So she's going to be really interesting to talk to. But at any stage, if you want to share your fundraising ideas with us, or we'd love to hear from you, either put a message on our Facebook page or send us an email to Jenny, who's got the wonderful task of doing all the research. And so her email address is jenny@sportscommunity.com.au, and share us those fundraising ideas and concepts that you've done so that we can help other people. So Joe, really, really excited about the fundraising project to the second half of the year, and seeing all the really cool things that clubs are doing, as well as that traditional fundraising that they've always done.
Lists of jobs, no one to help, people calling, spreadsheets to update, emails to send, equipment to order, functions to organise, too much to do and no time. This is what the day in a life of a sports club committee member can be like. But it doesn't have to be. Sign up to our Leadership Masterclass to learn how to calmly and easily lead your club to achieve big goals while minimising the amount of volunteers' time needed and engaging your whole membership. To sign up, simply visit www.sportscommunity.com.au.
Okay, joining me today for the interview on fundraising and participation and all things sports events and sports management is Nikki Weston. Nikki is the Sports Participation Officer at Upper Hunter Shire Council. And Nikki, you're joining us today from Brisbane Airport. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So what takes you out of Upper Hunter into Brisbane?
The Brisbane Marathon, my first attempt at a marathon yesterday, which was a lot of fun.
A lot of fun. So many people wouldn't equate running a marathon as a lot of fun, but your results were just fantastic. So you finished?
Yes, finished. Was 10th female overall. Ran probably about 23 minutes quicker than I was anticipating. I mean, obviously always like to go well, but I didn't want to put too much pressure on a set time, because obviously normally doing sprint triathlons you can just go flat out, but I did realise that if I went flat out I might not actually finish, which was the aim of coming up here. So I was a lot more tempered in my approach to it this time. And yeah, it was nice, because running around the Upper Hunter, obviously you can't just fill up your water bottle anywhere, and there's quite a lot of hills and it's usually hot. So it was nice to just have a really well-organised event with a lot of drink stations, loads of people cheering you. So yeah, it was, whilst my legs weren't appreciating probably the last 10Ks, it was fun overall.
So while that might have been your first marathon, it's not your first a major event like that, is it?
No, I've been overseas for a couple of sprint triathlon world championships. I was world champion in 2011, and then world champion duathlon in Adelaide last year. So yeah, I've done a few events, but no long distance sort of major events.
So just before we cross over into, because we don't often get the chance to talk to dual world champ. Well, actually, we do talk to a few of them on the show, but dual world champions like yourself. So like, what made you cross over from the duathlon to the longer format, 42 and a bit kilometres?
Well, the main reason is I'm the Hunter Academy triathlon coach, and of course most of the athletes there are early teens, so they do shorter or sprint distance, so the older ones do the sprint distance. And I just didn't want to race them this season, because, you know, sometimes it's just a bit awkward. So I thought, if I just stick to the longer distance stuff, which obviously those young athletes don't do, then I won't have to keep racing them.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So, Nikki, you've got the the wonderful title, which I don't know that anyone else, any other shire or city around the country actually has someone in the role of sports participation officer. Do you want to just share a little bit about what that role is and what you seek to achieve out of that role?
Yeah, well, when I started the role, which is nearly 10 years ago, it was a new position created at council to try and encourage young people aged between 11 and 16 into more sporting clubs. So that was my role. That was one of the KPIs, was to target that age group. And I thought, oh, I'll just ring other councils and see what their sports participation officers do, and found nobody had any. So the closest I could find was major sports development officers. So yep. It is a bit of a unique role, but it's just it's been really an eye-opener for the community of how much sport is available. A lot of the problem with people not participating in sport was because they didn't know what was available. A lot of small towns, it's notoriously hard to find out who you get in contact with to join up. Even with all the Facebook and social media now, it's still sometimes hard to find how you can join up. So we addressed that to start with, and then we've set in place some strategies to encourage people who are on pension cards. So we have a subsidy program for people who are struggling, and we make sure that a lot of the sports try and keep their costs down to a minimum. So like our touch football comp is $40 for the season for juniors, so you probably don't really need a subsidy for that one. So the subsidy is mainly aimed at those winter sports, which are more expensive. So once we started making doing the obvious stuff, which was that people didn't know what was available, then we got into the more nitty-gritty about the cost and how the competitions are run. And so we've helped the clubs change a few formats so that they run them in the evenings. So the soccer, which was too expensive for their seniors, that they now run a futsal competition so that the adult can play for, sort of $90 a season as opposed to the $300 to play winter soccer. Yeah. So, it's just grown, and we've just kept trying to add more strategies to get more people participating. So now it's not just 11 to 16-year-olds. It sort of just encompasses the whole community.
Yeah, I'll come back to that 11 to 16 age group, because that's typically the age group that we're seeing people actually drop out of sport, particularly those that have been in it for quite a while. But I just wanted to come back to that awareness, because it's amazing. It sounds such a simple thing that one of the biggest barriers to sport was that people just didn't know what was on in and what clubs had to offer and what clubs were even in their town. And when the Sports Commission research came out a couple of years ago that talked about the barriers to participation, that was one of the biggest barriers. And we thought that was so logical, so that it couldn't possibly be that the details were not updated on websites and that sort of thing. But as we go around the country and talk to clubs, and we ask the question, how many clubs' websites are up to date, how many clubs let council know what they do and how people can get involved, like very few, and I mean probably 5%, really have their websites and council information up to date. And it's really to their detriment, isn't it?
Well, that is one of the major bonuses of the role, is that over the years, people now know that I exist at council. So if they want to know anything about sport, they're in council and they get me, and I just, it's part of my role. I just make sure that I keep up to date with what sports are available and who's doing what and how they register and who the main committee contact is. I mean, I don't need to know all of the committee details, but as long as I've got someone who I know is happy to get a text saying, putting this person in contact with you, they're keen, that's all it needs most of the time. And I think people they're happy to approach me because they think it's my job, whereas I think sometimes they're a bit reluctant to just approach someone who they know is a volunteer. They don't perhaps want to ring them on a Saturday or a Sunday.
Yep.
But, they know that they can just ring council and say, does Nikki know, if there's archery or if there's Tai Chi or whatever sports that they're interested in, and I can let them know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great service, and as you say, I don't know of another, and we work with hundreds of councils around the country. I don't know that anyone's got a specific role for sports participation. So as you started and tackled that 11 to 16-year-old age group, what were some of the key areas that you really tackled? I mean, obviously you've touched on awareness, but But what were some of the key areas or strategies that, that have worked over that 6 or 7 year period you've been in the role?
I think recognising that there are different drivers for those kids. So we've got some that really like the structured rep. So a lot of girls have stayed in netball all through their teenage years because they really enjoy going to state championships, being part of that rep environment, wearing the nice dress, representing Scone, but also to make sure that there's the social comp for all those people who aren't, who don't want to play at that level. So our touch football competition in Scone is the biggest in the Upper Hunter. I think we've got about 1,000 people that play, which for a town of 5,000 people, you know, but they come from further afield than that.
Sure.
But it's a 12 and up, play with whoever you want. So there's A through to F grade. People can play with their boyfriends, girlfriends, mums, dads. And I think that picks up a lot of other people who perhaps don't want to play your regular, more focused sport. They just turn up, they play for half an hour, they pick their team, you know, get themselves a shirt, and away they go. It's affordable as well, but it's just there's no pressure, there's no commitment required. I think that has helped a lot of them.
Yeah.
And I know I'm talking a lot, but
no,
another
please.
One was we started the futsal comp for the sort of year 11 and 12 kids who basically couldn't commit any more time than half an hour.
Yep.
So that they could rock up. They didn't have to rest. They didn't have to, you know, send anyone to committee meetings. They just paid the money. They rocked up. They played their half an hour of indoor soccer and went home again. And that has proved really popular. It is also now an adult comp, but we really got a lot of year 11 and 12 kids into that competition. I think it's just, you know, that they all recognise that it helps with your study if you can get out, but they knew that they didn't have to come and commit. They weren't, there was no pressure on them to be there early, help set up, any of that. So I think just at recognising that you've got to offer a range of experiences for those kids to keep them interested.
Yeah, that going back to the first illustration that you use, which is the social side, kids wanting to play with friends, wanting to play with friends in a social, semi-structured, semi-competitive environment, but it's about playing with their friends and their mates or boyfriends, girlfriends, however, that we're only just beginning to realise how an important driver that is, aren't we? Because traditionally we've picked sides based on how good you are, and we're now seeing people flock to that social sort of competition or social sport, which has been fantastic.
Yeah, they do. I mean, it is a big factor. It's basically a social night out for a lot of the kids. That, you know, they turn up and they play with their friends, they hang around and they watch some other people play. And sometimes it's not ideal because I think people overcompensate for the fact that they've only done half an hour of exercise. But still, they're out. You know, in the rural area now, we also have a lot of mental health issues with teenagers. So
yes.
Just making them feel connected, we hope that it makes them look after the sport complex as opposed to come and do any damage. And we don't have much damage to it. So I think just having as many of them as possible feel that it's their place to go and play sport, and that the, you know, they are part of the community and a respected part of the community. It's all sort of interwoven.
Yes, yes. No, that's absolutely fantastic, and it's and the other one that you then the other characteristic that you've interwoven is creating a format that fits the lifestyle of the target group, isn't it? Like, You were focusing in on the year 11, year 12 students and created a format specifically for that. But it applies equally to busy adults, doesn't it? That we
yeah, it does. I mean, our cricket club is actually going quite well this season, but in the past has struggled. And I think that people just now don't have a whole day to get up to go and play a sport. They just need it to be fairly short. You know, so the cricket's moving to probably 2020 next season on a Friday evening.
Yeah.
Just because that's the same, it fits in. It means parents can go and do whatever their kids need them to do at the weekend, but they still get to play their sport, just a shortened version of it. And I know that probably doesn't appeal to the diehard cricket fans, but if it keeps people involved, because they are your volunteers, the parents, so you need to keep them involved and keep them keen to turn up as well.
Yeah, and it's not about taking away a format, it's about adding to the formats, isn't it? So that there's a format of the game that suits you and your stage of life. And cricket's an interesting one because the game itself is going through a format evolution, and now clubs are not just changing formats, but changing audiences as well. So women's cricket is, women and girls cricket is very, very fast growing, and a lot of clubs are having trouble working out how to bring the changes of format and the changes of audiences into their club structure, which is interesting to watch at the moment. But
yeah, well, there's a good grant out for cricket clubs to try and encourage girls. We started in Scone that cricket program, which was probably about 4 years ago. I actually went and did the level one coaching course because we couldn't find, or the one other lady came and did it with me. And that was a huge success. But the only problem was, I have three boys, and after 2 years of doing it, I said, you know, someone else needs to take this over. And it just didn't keep the momentum going. So yeah, hopefully they're going to apply for this grant. Hopefully if they get this grant that they'll be able to pick that up again, because there definitely is the need. There's a lot of girls who are really good at cricket. They enjoy it. It surprised me. They really enjoy the sitting under the tree waiting for your turn to bat because it's a great time to socialise. I just thought it was the most boring thing. I thought that there's no way they're going to enjoy this. They've got to sit around for hours. But they loved it. They had the music going, all sitting together. You know, it was almost a bit of a shame when it was actually their turn to go back because it meant that they had to leave. But, you know, I think that sometimes we don't look at it from their perspective. That was their main driver for being there, was all that time not doing anything.
Yeah, absolutely right. And us blokes that have grown up playing cricket all our lives, we certainly recognise that social, idle chit-chat, you know, getting to know, or not getting to know each other, but, you know, friends interacting as friends, excuse me, in that time where you're waiting to bat, yep, particularly someone like me who batting didn't take up much of their time. But, it's really interesting to watch it roll around into those traditional men's sports, Aussie rules, rugby league, rugby union, now becoming embraced by excuse me, the women and girls. So interesting how sports is changing and our appetites is changing. But that puts a lot of pressure on the club volunteer, doesn't it? Because now all of a sudden what they've been doing for, you know, ever and a day now needs to change, whether it's format, audience, time. There's a lot of changes that probably need to be made to make sport more accessible to the community than it's traditionally now been because of the, you know, our time poorness and all those sorts of things.
Yeah, and I think it's hard because most volunteers have got a lot of other things. I mean, it's usually your busiest people who do volunteer at your club. And it takes a lot of time to implement those changes, to work out how you're going to do them, to change your programs that you're running. It's all very time-consuming. It's much easier to just offer the same stuff that you've been offering for years. So particularly with my role, that's where it's been good because I've been able to set up competitions, get them running, and then hand them over to the club. So that's how we manage the futsal. The Scone Football Club now manages that competition, but I set it up, and organised it, got it running, made sure that there was enough people interested, and then handed it over to them, which was a great benefit to them. They didn't have to sort of test it and see how it went first, save their volunteers time in all of the setup of the program. But not all those clubs have someone who is available to give them their time and you know, get it organised for them. So, yeah, it would be good if there were more people. I suppose state sporting associations, development officers could probably be helpful in changing competitions to suit the current climate.
Definitely. Now, one of the really cool things, and for our listeners that have been following us for over recent weeks, they'll know that we're knee-deep in researching a fundraising book. And one of the things that we do each fortnight is pick a fundraising type and send it out to our audience and say, hey, send us in your cool things that you've seen on this topic. And one of the topics was, using sporting activities and sporting events as fundraisers. And we're really, really excited, Nikki, when you sent yours back because you cross over a whole range of sports in your role. So you were able to talk about a couple of fundraisers that let's start with the local netball club and their fundraiser.
The netball club, they put on a very successful fundraiser. So it was to raise money for their rep teams.
Yep.
So the rep teams took responsibility for it, which meant that the rep players had to provide a couple of coaches each rep team, plus the rep coach was obviously happy to donate their 2 days of the school holidays. We ran it through the council, so it was actually a sports activity day, which covered the... I don't think Netball New South Wales had got their head around how to have all those kids registered, but not really registered.
Yep.
So we ran it through council, insurance, and, yeah, the club put on 2 days of coaching, just some great coaching, because we have got some really highly qualified coaches, with a barbecue, and I think they raised, you know, maybe $1,500, $2,000. Towards their rep team, so that was really successful. And so the gymnastics club did the same, but Gymnastics New South Wales offers you that come and try insurance, so you can just have people sign up for the day or two. And our coaches donated their time, and the council donated use of the building. Mm-hmm. So any money that came in was profit for the club. And the club actually bought uneven bars after going that through that process, so that was really useful as well.
Yeah, so effectively what both those clubs, the gymnastics and netball club, created was school holiday programs that used, you know, their own coaches and their own athletes as the staff, as opposed to our traditional volunteers that we use.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of some of the development officers offer those sorts of activities in the holidays, but they usually charge $30 or $40, and that all goes to whoever is putting the clinic on. You know, we had Liz Ellis clinics in Scone before, and I think the Netball Club just looked at that and thought, you know, we could probably do that and keep the money for ourselves rather than paying it out to someone else, because quite often they then come and ask you to provide a couple of coaches to help out.
Yes.
So rather than them collecting all the money, the club just thought, yeah, that's something that we could achieve. And it was very well received. I think they are planning to do it more regularly.
Yeah, and one of the things, the misconceptions about school holiday programs, is you need the high-profile, almost ambassador to draw people to the event. But it's actually almost the opposite, where the younger kids really, really love being led and coached by those older kids, particularly those that have got the representative tracksuits on that they're aspiring to get themselves.
Yes, yeah, they did. I mean, yeah, we've never had any, more success with getting high-profile people, because a lot of the time the kids don't even really know them.
Yes.
So our rugby league club does the same. I mean, they don't do it as a fundraiser. They just put on coaching clinics, but they use their first grade players that all the young kids love, because they know them, they watch them every week. They rarely bring in, because I mean, you can bring in the Knights players, but a lot of the guys need to go and support various teams. It's not always the local team. So, you know, having our Scone first grade come and do some coaching with them gets them just as excited, and is not as expensive. So I mean, most of the time they'll just donate their time, and they're happy to give back to the club.
Oh, and the other thing is that to teach kids is a great way to learn yourself and develop your own personal skills. So we see lots of those kids that get that opportunity to coach younger kids really develop and flourish, whether it's their communication skills, it's their interpersonal skills. And so there's lots of benefits for the kids that are giving up their time as coaches as well in that process as well. School holiday programs are really relatively easy for clubs to pull together and relatively cheap, and they're a fantastic, fantastic fundraising activity. But there's also lots of other benefits around it, because you can use those come and try day type activities to then recruit new members, can't you?
Yes, that's right. It is a great way to get more people involved, and quite often they'll sign up afterwards, they'll decide that it was something that they do want to do. So you can build your club at the same time.
How did the clubs market the come and try, or those programs, those holiday programs? Were you involved in that at all through the marketing and getting the numbers there?
We put out a thing that we call What's On. So before the school holidays, we put out everything that's on in the holidays. So all the library activities, all the sporting activities, the youth centre excursions, it all goes into the What's On. Everyone just expects to get it now. I mean, obviously we've started doing digital format and they can just download it rather than having to print thousands of copies. But people know where to find the information of what's going on in the holidays. And, that's been a great way of promoting it all.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's one of the things that clubs often overlook is how much resource that council has that can be supporting clubs. So whether it's the council website or whether it's their regular quarterly newsletters or communications to all of the residents in that particular council, there's a whole lot that council can do. So you would obviously strongly recommend that clubs contact their council to see if they can't promote various things like school holiday events and fundraising activities?
Yeah, because, I mean, most of them have a good website that people pay their rates on or get their rubbish, you know. So people are used to checking their council website. And they've all got Facebook pages now as well. So it's a great way to get free advertising because council doesn't expect sporting groups to pay for that sort of stuff. You just might pick up extra people who aren't checking regular sources. But we still use our local newspaper, but the what's on has definitely been the way to go, and council has been really proactive about making sure everybody knows everything that's going on.
Yeah, fantastic. And the other service that you mentioned at the start of the call, which I kind of glossed or just skipped over, but really important, was the insurance and making sure that the participants are insured, because from time to time they will get injured. So Upper Hunter Shire Council, they have a type of insurance that allowed for these school holiday programs to run. Is that how that worked, or how did the...
Yeah, council put it under their public liability insurer.
Yeah. So again, the... sorry?
Yeah, so they just provided that public liability cover so that, the club didn't have to... Because I think Netball New South Wales were trying to work out a way to do it, but they sort of hadn't left a lot of time in the lead-up, so they just... went with council. It was just an easier way to do it.
Yeah.
It was just under our public liability, so obviously people have to sign a waiver to say that they recognise that there was no personal accident insurance,
yeah.
Which I don't think most sporting clubs offer anyway.
No.
And so that covered the event for the day.
Yeah, fantastic. So the insurance is something that when you're putting on school holiday programs, really must consider. So there's a couple of options. The club's own insurance policy, the your peak sporting body, so talking to the club development.
The State Sporting Association, because, I mean, the Gymnastics New South Wales have that in their policy, that if you're at a come and try, you are covered by their insurance.
Fantastic.
So it's worth just checking that your State Sporting Association may well have come and try policies that you can make use of.
Well, and the State Sporting Association or body would be the first place that you go to be looking for support on how to pull together a program like this, because they've seen it many times before, regardless of what the sport is. Yeah, so lots of easy... I really like the school holiday program. I mean, being a parent of three girls, school holidays is a nightmare for parents, and we get that communication about what's on and, you know, how can we get a couple of hours of relief from our children, which we love dearly, and school holiday sporting programs are really, really well received by parents and a great fundraiser for clubs with not a lot of work compared to a lot of other fundraising activities.
That's right. It isn't a lot of work. I mean, the other one that the rugby league did recently was just a night out, so it was only parents, and it was just a good fun night out, and you paid, I think it was $35, and got a glass of champagne and some nibbles. And we had a great night, and that is also another very easy way. I think if you can do fundraising and it doesn't require people to do something that they're not used to, you know, selling raffle tickets, most people hate doing. They hate sitting down the street with a box of tickets.
Yep.
And you want to try and, you know, you want to try and get your money from people outside of your club rather than always relying on those same parents.
Yeah, unquestionably.
So there are ways of doing it, but the school holiday program is definitely an easy way to do it.
Yeah, because it ticks a lot of boxes. Oop, there's that fight. So it ticks a lot of boxes. It's social, it's sporting, you can get the kids to run it, and it's a good leadership, and you get people from outside the club community. So there's all sorts of benefits. But, Nikki, it sounds like that they're calling you on your plane, so we'll let you go.
Thank you
so much for sharing your knowledge and experience with us, and congratulations on finishing your first marathon. I'm assuming it's probably? Have you got the taste, or is it just you've ticked a box and that's it? That's all I'm going to do?
No. I've got the taste. There's one in Dubbo in a few weeks, so I'm thinking I might head out there. But I just like to say, though, it is great that what sport community is doing is fantastic, because so often you go to conferences and you hear all the research about, you know, we haven't got enough volunteers, we haven't got enough money, we haven't got enough kids playing sport. No one gives you actually practical solutions to your problems. And when I read your email the other day about the running of the balls, the tennis club that sets off the balls down the hill and everyone buys a ball for $5 and the winner crosses the finish line, I just thought there's some great ideas out there. And I mean, all those people are obviously happy to share, but it's just getting those ideas out so that other clubs can do similar fun events, because it's very hard to think of new innovative ideas all the time when it's something that you're volunteering at, and you know, you don't have a lot of time, you've probably got a job and a few kids hanging around as well. So to read those sorts of things and just think, oh yeah, we could do that. I mean, we mightn't do it with tennis balls, but you know, we could do the same with sort of footies in Scone. And so yeah, it's just great to have that idea sharing.
It's been amazing for us. I mean, we've got a really large, passionate community of people that are just everyday people that have done these really clever things, simple clever things, so for us it's a bit of a change of strategy for us, because normally we do all the research and then trying to publish the information, but we've done it a little bit differently and say, rightio, well here's an event type. You know, share your ideas and share your experiences, yep. And it's been amazing coming back, and so we're now putting that out in the fortnightly newsletters, and now getting some really cool stories being told on the podcasts, and we'll bring them into the training sessions and the online training, and so make it easy for the volunteer, because there's nothing more daunting at the start of the year than a blank piece of paper, which is your start of your fundraising strategy. So, you know, I too saw that tip truck full of tennis balls where they pulled it down and first ball across the line wins. Fantastic, because everyone hates to sell raffle tickets, as you said, but, you know, to sell a tennis ball coming out of a tip truck is fun, and people get behind it. So
yeah, that's right. And people have, you know, some people are so clever with those ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just great to just not have to always be trying to think of everything yourself.
Oh,
yeah, really good. Well done.
Absolutely. Oh, well, no, we just tell the stories. But if you are out there and you do have a really cool, fun, successful fundraising idea, send it through to us either on our website, at our Facebook page at Sports Community, or our lead researcher on this project, which is Jenny. So jenny@sportscommunity.com.au. Send us an email and we'll get in touch and we'll tell your story and share it with everyone. Like you have today, Nikki. So we're so grateful for your time, and rest up the legs, and we'll be in touch again over the journey, I'm sure.
Great. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Nikki. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us on today's podcast. Make sure you visit our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au to take advantage of our free resources to help your club be successful. And while you're there, subscribe to our newsletter to keep up to date with all the latest and greatest in grassroots sports. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and be sure to subscribe to our podcasts on your podcasting service, iTunes, Stitcher, or whichever you may use. We would also love to welcome you onto one of our weekly webinars, the schedule of which you can find on our website. And if you're looking for a unique gift, why not give the gift of knowledge by visiting our shop and purchasing one of our training products for someone at your club. Once again, thanks for being part of today's show. I'm Joe Novella.
And I'm Steve Pallas. Thank you for making us part of your sports community.